Mayor,
please.
I'm wondering if the who pulled the consent item?
Oh. Mr. Lightning.
Can we save that?
I was wondering if it'd be okay to save that.
Save that until after the hearing on 9:45 at the 9:45 time, sir. Okay. All right. Then let's take, please, item 1065.
Ratify a successor collective bargaining agreement with the City and the Portland Police Association relating to the terms and conditions of employment of representative employees in the Portland Police Bureau Association bargaining unit.
Okay, Anna Canwit, our Human Resources Director, is here to walk us through this. Just a couple quick comments from me. I think it's important to remember that this agreement is in front of us not because it has come up in the regular cycle of union contracts. That cycle would have this agreement come up for council consideration next year, but because we face a staffing crisis in the Portland Police Bureau. When I was first elected mayor and became police commissioner, one, we cut 50 positions out of the Portland Police Bureau because of a historic budget challenge that the city had. We were down $21 million, and the police bureau was able to hold positions that were vacant, and we reduced the size of their workforce on paper. Meanwhile, it was actually at that point fairly easy for the city of Portland to hire police officers. There were agencies all over California that were laying off police officers because of their budget situations. So even though we reduced the workforce on paper, it was not that hard then to recruit new officers. Since then, frankly, everything's changed. Police agencies all over the country are struggling to hire police officers. I think the number of vacancies statewide in Oregon is something like 250 or 300. There are agencies, particularly here in the Northwest, like Kennewick, that are offering salaries well above what we pay in Portland. So back in March, when I gave my State of the City speech, I indicated that I wanted to open this agreement because we need to be competitive. It's a basic employer question of if you can't hire people, what do you need to do? One thing we did was add more background investigators, and we're working to speed up that process. And the other thing we need to do is raise our starting salary and our pay so that we are competitive and that people don't want to leave and that people want to leave other departments and come to work for us. So that's the main reason why we opened this agreement. There's some other issues on the table that we wanted to address. One, the Portland Police Association had filed grievances against a number of policies that the city was implementing, like changing our shift system to better serve the community and deal with the fact that we were down in workforce, like a new discipline policy that we believe is the right thing to do and that also responds to our community's need to make sure that we are an accountable police bureau. Like body-worn cameras and like the question of multiple independent police review investigators at investigations. They'd actually filed 11 grievances, and we wanted to get those resolved. And then we have the 48-hour rule, which is a relic of an earlier time and a problem for the police bureau. Then we believed that it was time to get rid of the 48-hour rule. The agreement in front of us sweeps away all those grievances, gets rid of the 48-hour rule, and pays people more. That's what it does. I believe it's the right thing to do. I want to, again, appreciate the 6 months of work, Anna, that you and your team have put into negotiating this, and let you walk us through any other particulars of this that I've missed.
Great. Thank you, Mayor Hales, Commissioners Anna Canwit, Director of the Bureau of Human Resources. As Mayor Hale said, the ordinance before you today asks Council to ratify a tentative agreement between the Portland Police Association and the City of Portland. The tentative agreement was ratified by the Portland Police Association, the 95% approval rate. Daryl Turner, the president of the association, will speak for a brief amount of time when I'm finished this morning. If ratified by Council, this agreement will be in place through June 30th, 2020. This tentative agreement does accomplish several key goals and creates a multi-pronged approach to addressing our serious staffing issues, as the mayor noted. It will move the Bureau forward, make us a competitive police agency in what has become an incredibly competitive environment nationwide. In terms of most agencies being down with staffing and trying to recruit for police officers. As you noted, it removes language in the contract requiring a 48-hour advance notice to officers before an initial interview. This has been a key objective for the Department of Justice as part of the settlement agreement with the city as well as others. The tentative agreement also includes agreement to a draft body-worn camera policy, recognizing the public input that has gone into this policy already, but also memorializing the Portland Police Association Police Bureau agreement to present the policy for further public overview prior to finalization. While we do not have body cameras yet, having a policy in place positions the Bureau well in terms of being able to move forward with that once that happens, rather than purchase equipment and then try to craft a well-reasoned, workable policy. As you noted, Mayor Hales, with the tentative agreement, the Portland Police Association has agreed to withdraw 11 grievances and agreed to a settlement of one. Many of these, well, all of these are in the interest of the city, because when we go to arbitration, it is a third party that ultimately makes the decision and removes control from the city. Several of them, as you mentioned, could have significant impacts on the Police Bureau's ability to continue some important changes. You mentioned the five-shift configuration, the outside rotational support, the staffing grievance, all, if the city did not prevail in arbitration, could again have a significant impact on the Bureau's ability to continue staffing. The discipline grievance that was withdrawn as well also paves the way to put in place the discipline matrix, which again has been a component of our settlement agreement with the Department of Justice. One of the things that the Portland Police Association has agreed to, which is beneficial to its members, to the Bureau, and to the city, is moving to a city self-insured plan, which is different from their current insured program. This will reduce costs to the Bureau. And also, they have the Portland Police Association has agreed to a wellness component in that plan that requires a member to visit a treatment provider at least once every 2 years in order to retain a 5% premium share. If they do not do that, the premium share moves to 10%. While this doesn't sound like a lot, the import of this is that we know if individuals have a relationship with their treatment provider, they are more likely to disclose conditions, have earlier treatment, which is, of course, excellent for the individual, but also in the end keeps the city's costs down for our self-insured health insurance program. I have great concern, as you mentioned, Mayor Hales, is the ability to attract and retain qualified police officers. This is a competitive market, and what we are looking at is an increased complexity of work, increased calls, rightfully so, for transparency and accountability, expectations that are also correct and right around new ways to work with mentally ill individuals in the community, and increased community presence. So we want to be able to recruit officers who embrace and thrive doing police work in this environment, in these working conditions. It's not to say we don't have officers who do that already, but that in the future, as we do our recruitment efforts, will be the type of people that we are looking for, and that is extremely critical. And again, we are not the only police agency looking for that skill set. The tentative agreement reduces the probationary period for lateral hires. Right now, that is the same as an entry-level officer at 18 months, reduces it to 12. Not surprisingly, asking an experienced officer to come to the city of Portland and then have a year and a half on probation really has been too big an ask, and we are not competitive there. It creates incentives for new officers, lateral officers, to join the Bureau, monetary incentives, as well as what we've termed a finder's fee for officers who bring a candidate into the Bureau. The tentative agreement also implements a new retire rehire program. That is also a key component in terms of what is a multi-pronged approach to addressing the staffing issues. Currently, police officers who retire from the city of Portland often go to work for another agency. They were prohibited for doing so under our current contract, this opens that up, and the hope is that many will stay post-retirement, which again helps fill that gap. And given the high numbers of eligible officers to retire, this again is a key component of our overarching staffing plan. The tentative agreement obligates both the union and the city to discuss implementation of a community service officer program. This is a program that has more routine work being performed by the community service officers, leaving our more experienced and trained police officers to do the work that we think is much more important, going out to the communities, doing active, proactive police work rather than simply responding to calls and writing low-level tickets. We also are obligating ourselves to discuss implementation of a student loan reimbursement program. Again, this is a national problem with the crushing debt that so many students are facing. A student loan reimbursement program for new hires would be another tool in our toolkit in order to increase our ability to be the agency that is most competitive in terms of bringing in new qualified officers to the city of Portland. The tentative agreement, as you mentioned, Mayor Hales, moves the entry rate of police officers to our current six-month rate. Right now, the Portland Police Bureau has the lowest entry rate in the state, despite the fact that we have the most complex policing in the city of Portland, and it has been a barrier to our ability to attract new officers. The tentative agreement also adds three new steps over the course of 3 years, with an additional 3% between the steps, which means officers will top out after 8 years instead of five. We believe this is also a very important component, again, in our multi-prong approach to address the staffing issues in order to make the pay for our officers very competitive with the rest of the Western region and the country. When fully implemented, the ongoing cost of the agreement without adding in the cost of living is $6.6 million. While this is by no means an insignificant number, the staffing issues facing the Bureau are also not insignificant. The public work session on police staffing painted a very bleak picture. Decreased staffing impacts response time. Decreased staffing impacts the ability to connect with our communities. Officers have been less able to attend community meetings or simply stop to engage with children in the community because of the need to respond, of course, to the most critical calls. Decreased staffing will lead to an increased crime in probably most likely in our most vulnerable neighborhoods. The tentative agreement is a balanced agreement designed to address, as I said, our most pressing problems and will position the city and the Bureau well to be a competitive and attractive agency. This is also the agreement, a result and a model of collaboration to meet the needs of both the city and the police with our work with the police union. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions for
Anna? I just have a clarification question. In the findings in the ordinance number 11, it says it refers to the public process to discuss body-worn camera policies. But then in the last sentence says, following this public review and comment process, the Portland Police Association and the Portland Police Bureau will meet to discuss finalization of the body-worn camera policy. So would it still have to come back to council?
I don't know, actually.
I don't think so.
Policies
generally
the policy's separate.
Are dictated by the chief. They have to be, in some cases they have to be bargained, in some cases they aren't, but they don't typically come to council.
So the commissioner in charge of the police bureau would be working with the police chief?
Yeah, I mean, we're obviously going to have a public process about body-worn camera policy.
Then it's the commissioner in charge who signs off and the chief. Right. Thank you for that clarification. There was also a discussion of community service officers who might, I don't know if you...
You didn't mention that. Yeah, that is in the proposed contract. Yes.
Yes.
And I'm actually not finding the tuition reimbursement for new recruits.
No, it is. It's in the contract as well.
Later, if you could just point me in the right direction. Yeah, thank you.
I will find the page for you. It is there. Thank you.
Yeah, both of those suggestions that were good ones, I appreciate those, are in the proposed contract. So anybody was wondering, those are suggestions that Commissioner Fritz made about both a tuition reimbursement incentive for officers that we're recruiting and the use of what are called community service officers done in other cities where they're public safety officers, they're not armed, but they're allowed to do some police work that otherwise would be performed by police officers, basically stretching the resource that we have. Eugene uses them, for example. Okay, other questions for Anna or points that you wanted to add? Sorry.
So then Daryl Turner is going to come up.
Okay, so yeah, we're going to hear from the Portland Police Association, then we'll take public testimony after that. So thank you very much, Anna. We might have other questions later in the hearing. So
yes, I'll be here.
All right. All right. Mr. Turner, come on up, please.
Good morning, Mayor Hales, Commissioners. I'm Officer Daryl Turner, 25-year-plus veteran of the Portland Police Bureau and the president of the Portland Police Association. First, I have to excuse me. I'm getting over a cold, and I actually feel great, but I sound terrible, so if I take a sip of water to clear my throat, please excuse that. This was a long process. This process involved many facets. The facets that I want to talk about, Director Kenwood talked about a lot of those facets. So I want to talk about the staffing issues and the community concerns. Obviously, over the last 2.5 to 3 years, we've seen the police force dwindle to a point where we have catastrophic staffing issues, where we were only taking calls for service, call, where we weren't able to get out and be proactive. And what I mean by proactive, those are the community concerns I'm talking about. Engage with the community. Be proactive in the neighborhoods. Listen to what the community had to say, and not only listen to it, but incorporate those in our practices. We weren't able to do those things because we're basically going from call to call to call. Every shift, we were hiring on overtime because we needed those minimum staffing to be able to answer those calls. We've seen the dynamics of the city of Portland change in the last 7 to 8 years, and a lot of it has to do with the staffing of the Portland Police Bureau and the lack of resources that we were able to avail 10 years ago. For a dozen years, I worked the Old Town District, and I was proud to be able to walk my district. I was proud to be able to meet with the business owners and with the residents and with the people who lived in the community there in Old Town. And I was proud of that. That was a sense of pride to me to come to work every day. And then with the staffing issues, officers aren't able to do that in their communities, and we wanted them to be able to do that in those communities. Those are the community concerns we wanted to address, as well as the staffing issues we wanted to address. Last night, I texted Anna Kenwood with our results of our ratification vote. 91% of our members voted. That's a record vote from our membership. We were looking at the former record was around 75-77%. 95% voted yes, another record. 5% voted no. So that's another record. Our members are engaged. They want to be able to do policing the way Portland wants to be able to be policed. They want to be able to give resources to a diverse and changing communities that they work in. And they want to be able to do that in a way which is meaningful to the community. And the only way to do that is to bolster our staffing, to keep the best of the best that we have right now, but not only that, to bring in the best of the best that we can. In the last week and a half, I've talked to over a dozen officers who can retire in October. They are going to stay based on this collective bargaining agreement. They're going to stay here in Portland. They're going to stay with us either one way or another, either in the retire rehire program, or they're going to stay just another few years before they decide to retire. They want to be here. They want to police Portland. They want to do it the way Portlanders want it to be policed. But we can't do it with the staffing levels that we have right now. I want to thank you. I want to thank the commissioners for I've met with all the commissioners at least once or twice to talk about this. Had a lot of contact with you and your staff, and obviously you were proponents of this. I want to thank Anna Kenwood and her staff for also pushing forward. But for the police officers of Portland who do the work, they're the ones who are really going to benefit because they're going to be able to work in the community. The community is going to benefit because they're going to have the police officers they want in their communities doing the things they want in their communities. People talk about police reform and different police reforms. We can talk about the 48-hour rule, which is something that was put into the contract in the 1970s, and now we're going to take it out because we have community concerns about that. We want to make sure we build more trust in the community. We want to build on the relationships we already have in the community. We want to build on the friendships and partnerships we have in the community. And the way to do it is to build trust and to show that things like the 48-hour rule can go away and we can still do the effective policing. We can still protect Portland police officers, but we can still do the things that we need to do in the community. So those are things we want to talk about. And like I said, I had over a dozen officers in the last week and a half or so come to me and say, I'm staying. We're going to bring more people in. We're going to retain more people, and that will help the community, and that's what we wanted to do with this contract, and that's why we started these conversations earlier rather than later because of the catastrophic staffing issues and the lack of resources and the lack of community contact that we had over the last 2.5 years.
Mayor, I have a question.
Excuse me.
Darrell, you make a case for how this contract will help us retain quality, experienced officers.
Yes, sir.
I can just say from some of the media I've sampled, there's some skepticism in the public that it will help us recruit the officers we need to address the staffing. Tell us what your confidence level is that with some of the changes that we're proposing, we'll be able to effectively compete for the officers that we want to have work for us.
I will tell you your best recruiters will be your officers that are working here right now. When we have people who want to become Portland police officers come here and go on ride-alongs, who talk to the other officers, and they talk to them and they say, why do you want to be here? Why are you here in Portland? Why have you stayed 10, 15, 20 years? Why have you done that? And it's because the community values our work, our leaders value our work, and we want to be here because we want to be the best of the best, but also this is the most dynamic nuances that we have for the city of Portland to deal with issues that you wouldn't have anywhere else. Those are things police officers want to do. I know it sounds corny, but police officers want to work. They want to help people. We are here to help people. We're here to make sure that those who need the help, those who don't have the resources they need, get those resources. And when we do that, the enthusiasm, like I'm showing a little bit right now, actually comes out because that's what they want. And all police officers, anybody who wants to do this job should have that enthusiasm. And that means that when we have those people, that enthusiasm here that we've retained, bring other people in, and they will...
Folks, let's let him speak, please.
That will give us the ability to recruit new officers as well as lateral officers who want to come from other places. Portland officers, the most diversity in jobs that you can do in any police agency in the state. And police officers who want to do this work want to come here. And when they listen to all the officers who have been here and the enthusiasm they have and the happiness that they have for being here, they'll come here. And like I said, I talked to at least a dozen or more officers in the last week and a half, they were going to retire in October. They were gone. They were finished, and now they're going to stay. And we actually have an officer who I'm not going to name because I don't know if he gave his notice yet, who went to another agency and who called and said, I'm coming back. I miss Portland. I miss the city. I miss the police work. So that's the dynamic that this brings. And the retention of the officers that are the best of the best, bring in and also the best of the best, will benefit the community, will benefit our agency, will benefit the city.
Thank you very much. Well, I just want to say, Darrell, that... go ahead, please.
Mr. Turner, we've talked before about the fact that major crimes in the city have declined 35-40% since 20 years ago, and the police force is approximately the same size. Now, I know the number of calls has not gone down. In fact, it's gone up. And my understanding is the reason for that is we get a lot of calls about things that aren't really crimes. So my question for you is, do you think that over time, community service officers could handle a large percentage of these calls that aren't about traditional crimes?
I think there's going to be a level of they may be able to handle, but I think in general, most people will, you don't know what you get till you get there, but I think most people also want police officers there, not because a community service officer can't avail all the resources, but they just feel more comfortable with police officers there availing resources, having confidence in the fact that they're getting the best of the best, they're getting advice, they're getting resources, they're getting the help they want and they need. We talk about people who, I don't know if I've talked to you about it, but I've talked to the other commissioners about going to a cold burglary, as opposed to somebody calling in and say, hey, my house was burglarized, and so I want to make a report over the phone. When I used to go to cold burglary and other police officers, when we had the staffing, I not only went to that burglary and talked to that person, I would check their closets, under their bed, in their attic, and in their basement, so they would feel comfortable nobody else was there. So when I left, they felt comfortable that their house was safe. After being violated and burglarized, they felt comfortable their house was safe. Those are the things that the staffing of the police bureau will bring to other people, that confidence level, that safety level that Portlanders deserve and need.
Other questions for Darrell? Daryl, I just want to say that labor negotiations under the state of Oregon's Public Employee Collective Bargaining Act are never easy, and it is a negotiation, so you have to get to yes in this process. And I just want to say I appreciate the positive approach that you've taken and that your leadership and the Portland Police Association have taken. These are always difficult. There's things we don't agree on, but the fact that you the way you conducted yourself and yourselves in this process enabled us to get to an agreement that I think is in the best interest of the community and of our police officers, and I just want to say I appreciate it.
I thank you, and I thank everybody up in front of me and Commissioner Saltzman, who's not here right now, for your help, for listening, for at least making decisions based on what you heard and making sound decisions. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Okay, let's turn to the sign-up sheet, please. And again, folks, again, our apologies, but we're going to be taking a break. Whoever's speaking, could we ask you to stop so that folks can hear? We're going to take a break at 11 o'clock because we're going to lose a quorum. So we'll take as many people as we can before that based on the sign-up sheet. We told people 3 minutes. I think we should stick with 3 minutes, even though it will mean some folks will have to come back. Okay.
The first three, please come on up, are Isabel Sheridan, Dr. Leroy Haynes, Jr., and Dan Handelman. And they'll be followed by Joanne Hardesty, Khalil Edwards, and Kimberly McCullough.
Good morning.
Okay, Dr. Haynes isn't here. Let's go ahead and go with Joanne Hardesty.
Ms. Sheridan, I think you're first. Go ahead.
Thank you. As I listened to the presentations, I think some of this is old, and so I'm going to go through it quickly and then say a couple of things personally. Mayor Hales and members of the City Council, I've read three communications to you from the Albina Ministerial Alliance Coalition for Justice and Police Reform. First, the letter of September 25, 2016, calling for the elimination of the 48-hour rule. I'm so glad you're doing that. Second, the AMA's proposals of August 17, 2016, regarding this upcoming PPA contract. Third, the AMA's proposed policies for Portland Police regarding the use of body cameras sent to you via email on September 17, 2015. I agree with all these proposals. The need for communities to have a say in changing the above-noted elements in police contracts is a national concern. I refer you to the New York Times lead editorial of September 3, 2016. It's noteworthy that the Times saw the 24-hour wait time before Chicago police were questioned after deadly force incidents as too long. We have a 48-hour wait time in the current police contract. I am a white, retired professional who moved to Portland intentionally because of the quality of life I wanted in my retirement. I could live a relatively safe life here if I did not get involved in this issue, but I want to be involved. I want to see the Portland police culture change in deep, significant ways so that people of color can feel safe being in public the way I do. I am not referring to people who are in the process of committing a crime. People of any color. Of course, we want police to take care of that. I am referring to people who are simply walking down the street or in the mall or who are legally parked in their own cars in a traditionally white neighborhood. Community policing relies on the goodwill of the community. Racial profiling is always violent, always psychologically, sometimes physically. When ordinary citizens are subjected to unjustified violence by police, those citizens feel angry and humiliated. They no longer trust the police to respect their dignity or their lives. The City Council needs to change the police contract in the ways recommended by the AMA. I think some of those things have been done, maybe not all. And the training mandated by the DOJ settlement needs to include mandatory in-depth trainings on implicit bias and white privilege.
Excuse me, ma'am. Everybody's waiting to testify, so
she's on her last sentence. So.
I'm out of time.
Yeah, but we
until police behavior changes.
Thank you very much. Appreciate you being here this morning. Appreciate
that
your points. Thank you.
Yep. Hey.
Good morning.
Good morning, Mayor and Commissioners. I'm Dan Handelman with Portland Cop Watch, and we call upon the City Council to slow down the process.
Folks, I'm sorry, Dan. Hang on. Stop this time. Folks, we really need folks to be quiet enough that we can hear and you can hear who's speaking. So go ahead, please, Dan.
We call on you to slow down this process on ratifying this proposed contract for the PPA. The term of the contract is 3 years, and the old contract doesn't expire until next June. So it will lock in impediments to accountability until mid-2020 when the next mayor's race is underway. It would make more sense to allow the incoming mayor to negotiate the terms of the police officer's contract that he has to supervise for the next 4 years. While it has been an important goal of the community to get rid of the 48-hour rule, doing away with that cannot be the sole achievement of this round of bargaining. The PPA made it clear to the COAB last year that they believed the rule was necessary based on science that dictates a person needs 2 sleep cycles to refresh their memories. The fact that they are willing to give up this rule in exchange for pay raises means their devotion to this pseudoscience is wafer thin. Furthermore, the city attorney told Judge Simon last fall that the 48-hour rule has rarely, if ever, been invoked in recent years as officers have come in voluntarily for interviews 3 or more days after shooting incidents. Moreover, it seems as if officers will have longer than 48 hours in cases where they will now be allowed to review not just their police reports, but body camera footage in non-deadly force cases. By giving away the financial demands of the PPA in exchange for removing just one public policy issue, the city has nothing left to negotiate for further changes. We sent a letter to the mayor and the mayor-elect in conjunction with the AMA Coalition and the NAACP outlining changes that should be negotiated into this contract. For example, we called the city to fix the binding arbitration clause for officers who are fired so they'll stay fired. Our suggestion was to move deadly force incidents to the Civil Service Board system so that ultimately a judge and not a biased arbitrator could decide if firing an officer is valid. We listed a number of issues in the contract that act to impede our police oversight system. IPR Director Constantine Sevier outlined some of those aspects in presentation to council just 2 weeks ago. Those elements include the ability of IPR to investigate officer-involved shootings and compel officer testimony, and for the CRC to be able to hear deadly force case appeals. We had also urged the city not to allow the PPA to bargain their ability to review body camera footage before writing their police reports. While it's not written into the contract, the ordinance you're considering specifically lists that issue as a mandatory subject of bargaining. Even though there's no prohibition in the draft policy saying there is a prohibition saying there's an exception when officers use deadly force, A, that policy can be rewritten unless council formalizes it into code, and B, there's no such exception for use of force which causes injury but not death. The August letter also asked that the city make drug testing mandatory after deadly and excessive force incidents, the same way federal rules require truck drivers to take drug tests when they injure or kill someone in an accident. I just want to add that there's a couple of people we know have written to you, the AMA Coalition. I don't know why Dr. Haynes didn't make it down here this morning. The Legal and Voters, Sister of the Road, 2 former CRC members, including T.J. Browning, and the Mental Health Association. And there's a lot of community concern that you're rushing this into place and leaving the new mayor with unaccountable police who are getting very well reimbursed.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Good morning. Grant?
Good morning, Mayor and City Council members. For the record, I'm Joanne Hardesty, and I'm the president of the NAACP Portland branch. I am here today to ask you, where's the fire? I understand that you say that we are short on police officers, but I ask you, have you considered that we're in a new era of policing? We want different types of police officers to patrol our streets. We don't want armed occupiers. We want people who are willing to work with community to solve crime. I sent you a letter with real details, but here's one of my biggest concerns is that there's no criteria for retiring officers who will come back at the top of their pay grade if they want to. There's no criteria to determine whether or not they're culturally competent, and whether or not they build community relations or destroy community relations. There's no criteria to determine whether or not those officers actually are good police officers that should be added back to the police force. And so what you are creating is a system where we're going to pay the most expensive overtime cost to the most senior officers, whether or not they are the right people to get overtime. It would make sense that when you're bargaining a contract, that you would try to help the junior officers get more hours so that they get more experience, so that they become better community police officers. What you have done is created a pay-for-performance system that rewards people for just basically being in uniform on the street. This is a new era of policing. We have a new expectation of how police will engage with community members. We don't want the same old, same old. We don't want the robocops on our street. What we want are police officers who have cultural competency, that know the community they police, that are respectful of all people, regardless of whether they are houseless, whether they are people of color, whether they are children in our community. This contract does absolutely nothing to create a vision of what's possible. And I think the Trojan horse is you take away the 48-hour rule, and then you have an unlimited amount of time to review video footage. And so now it's not just 48-hour rules that hours that we're annoyed with. Now you've got days, maybe weeks, maybe months before police officers will have the opportunity to review video that only police officers can review in the first place. You cannot present that as an accountability measure when the only people that get to see the video, the only people that decide when to turn it on, the only people that decide what's important in the video are police officers. That's ludicrous. Please give the next mayor the opportunity to share a vision of policing and let us hold him accountable for the contract that we will be living under. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
The next three are Khalil Edwards, Kimberly McCullough, and Teresa Rayford, and they'll be followed by Ashley Albies, Tom Steenson, and Carol Landsman.
Good morning.
Morning. Mayor Hales in Portland City Council. I'm Khalil Edwards, Racial Justice and Alliance Building Manager at Basic Rights Oregon, the state's largest LGBTQ policy and advocacy organization. The LGBTQ community knows well what it's like to be the target of police violence, raids, abuse, and profiling, which is why we continue to stand with this coalition on this issue of policy, accountability, and transparency. The mistrust and fear our collective communities have about our criminal justice system is based on real experiences and a long history of misconduct from a system in desperate need of reform. This mistrust will not disappear until we deliver an open and transparent process around police accountability and reform. We recognize that this process can be painful and uncomfortable. This is democracy at work. The process of openness, transparency, and inclusion will go a long way toward building the trust the community needs in our criminal justice system. On behalf of Basic Rights Oregon, we join our partners in asking the City Council to slow down the process on ratifying a proposed contract for the Portland Police Association. It is premature and works against the progress of healing our communities. Address the many issues in the contract that act to impede our police oversight system. Finally, we would add that it is important to not lose sight of the goal of this process. We are here because of the lack of trust the community has in this process. The only way to rebuild that trust is for the City of Portland to be transparent and inclusive of the communities most affected. Give us a voice in this process. Do not separate this discussion from community oversight. We appreciate the work that has been done towards progress. We must do away with the 48-hour rule, and we must do this the right way. Portlanders deserve better. So let's get this process right. Slow this process down. Thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you very much.
Mayor Hills and Commissioners, my name is Kimberly McCullough. I'm the Legislative Director at the ACLU of Oregon. I have a submitted written testimony that has more details on what I'm going to say here, so I hope that you do take the time to look at it. As an initial matter, we are very disappointed that the whole CBA process has been done behind closed doors. There are a lot of issues in the CBA that impact our community in very serious ways, and the fact that the community has only now seen a draft CBA and a draft body cam policy so late into this process and just before ratification is very disappointing to us. That is particularly so as it relates to the body camera policy. We and myself personally were heavily involved in negotiations over the statewide body camera legislation, and we worked very closely with city representatives on that. It was what I believed was our mutual understanding, and what I heard from legislators over and over and over again, that the body camera policies at the local level were to be crafted after a very collaborative approach with the community. Mm-hmm. And that's not what we've seen happen here. Just to frame the issues, body cameras do have potential to be an oversight and accountability tool, but the policies that are attached to them have to be right. If the policies aren't right, they won't do what the community needs. And they won't feel like something that, you know, they've been offered to the community as body cameras are the solution to this problem, right? But if the policy is not right, the community is not going to see it that way. So then why do it at all? We have a lot of concerns about some of the particular issues in the body cam policy. I've done my best to review that as quickly as I can in the few days that I've been able to look at it, right, before it came here. So we do have more feedback. We will give more feedback. I've also attached a copy of my testimony back in May to this council and the body camera policy recommendations that we've sent to the mayor's office with offers to work with this commission, to work with the police bureau, to work with all of the stakeholders involved on crafting a proper body cam policy. We've made those offers. We think that needs to happen. We think stakeholders need to be brought together in a room to discuss this. Instead, what's happened is there were some community forums. Apparently, there were six. I only heard about three of them. I heard about one the day that it happened, and another 2 days before it happened, and another after it happened in the news. I have searched the internet far and wide and can't even find evidence anywhere of the other three. So if they were well publicized, you would think that there would be something online about them and that a group like the ACLU of Oregon would have known that they happened. So I just don't think that those forums were sufficient. Beyond that, there was an online forum that you could put information into. Giving general input is not the same as looking at a draft policy and commenting on it. There are things in this policy that I did not anticipate would even be there, so how was I supposed to comment on them in the first place? I realize my time is ending here, but if ratifying this agreement truly does nothing to the body cam policy, and if we can truly make changes, then why include it in this ratification at all? And why is it saying specifically that it's just going to go through the universal review and comment process, which, again, is an online form? It's not bringing stakeholders to a table. And why does the agreement explicitly state that officers reviewing footage, which is our biggest issue with this contract, that is a mandatory bargaining issue rather than a permissive issue, right? Mandatory issues are like wages and hours, right, and terms and conditions of employment. But review of footage is something that's super important to public safety and this council's responsibility to our community. So that should be a permissive issue. And I'm just very concerned that we're moving way too fast with too little time for input. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Can I just ask a clarifying question?
Yeah.
I asked about that finding 11. Is it your, although it'll be your or the police commissioner's right to finalize the policy, we haven't as council asked the bureau to go back to go look into body cameras. So is it your intent and presumably Mayor-elect Wheeler's intent that there will be a council public hearing on it?
I would expect that, yeah. I'm going to do that. So while we're working on the policy, again, what this agreement says is keep working on the policy. You're right. So that process is going to be public, And I think having the council involved in it would be a necessary step, so I'll certainly commit to that.
So with that in mind, does that...
Can I ask a clarifying question? Because what I read is that it says that it will go through the universal review and comment process. It says that in the agreement.
Yeah.
And it doesn't say anything about this council ever looking at it again. It doesn't say anything about stakeholders being convened.
Right.
So I have deep concerns that what's on paper here is not the process that the legislature anticipated. I ran into a senator on the way here, and I said, look at what's happening. And he was like, what?
Well, I'll make sure we clarify that. I want to get Anna back up to talk about that later. But it's my intent that the city council review the body camera policy, not just me and the police chief. It is our prerogative to produce it.
Yeah.
Obviously, there's going to be public involvement in creating it, but it's an important enough issue that, as I think we talked about this at the work session, that the council obviously needs to be involved and the community needs to have a chance to talk about the proposed body camera policy when it's there in front of us. So I want to do that. I will do that while I am still here.
Ms. McCullough, I've got a question for you, and I don't want to get too into the weeds because we've got a lot of people that want to speak, but... I know that we've heard a lot in the past several years about eyewitness testimony often being inaccurate, not because people lie necessarily, although sometimes they do, but just because people don't recall correctly. So I can see the idea of, I think some people think that if you give the officers a chance to review the body camera footage, then it'll save them from lying, but it'll also just save them from misremembering. My concern, though, is that if we allow officers to review the footage, but you don't allow the other people involved in the incident, so maybe suspects or whoever, to review the footage, then you will often wind up with situations where it looks like the police officer is truthful and the suspect is not, just because one had an opportunity to review the footage and the other did not. So I'm curious if you would consider the possibility that having police officers review body camera footage might be okay, as long as you allowed suspects or others involved in the situation to also review the footage before they give a statement.
Thank you for the question, Commissioner Novick. I totally get what you're getting at, but I think we have a slightly different approach, which is that the officer should write their report without reviewing the footage. They can then review the footage after that, right? And then they can make clarifications. If there's just a problem with, you know, eyewitness memory being faulty, there are there's a slew of recitals in this agreement, in the body camera policy itself, about that very exact issue. And I think there's going to be an understanding on the part of judges and so on that memory can sometimes be infallible, but what letting them review the footage ahead of time does is, in those situations where someone is intentionally being deceitful, we won't catch it. And I'd like to just give one very quick example that would illustrate that. We at the ACLU have actually it been brought to our attention situations where officers have learned to move their body in such a way that the body camera doesn't actually pick up the footage. And there was one particular incident where they were yelling at this man, "Stop resisting, stop resisting, stop resisting," while they beat him, and they turned their chest another direction, and then an eyewitness caught it on their own video. Now, if that officer had been able to review that footage before they wrote their report, then they'd be like, oh, look, I managed to do what I was trying to do. And now I'm not saying that all officers lie, right? I realize that there's a lot of police officers that go into this job, and the vast majority, who want to protect their communities. They want to help people. But the problem is that we get these stories of officers harming people and lying, and this right here is something that we hear from the community is a huge concern. So I just feel like it's going to unravel the positive impact of body cam footage. So write the report, review the footage, have the opportunity to make updates, and if there's some sort of fallibility there, a judge is going to get that.
Okay, thank you very much. Look forward to more discussions. Thank you. Okay, go ahead, please.
For the record, my name is Teresa Rayford. I'm the lead organizer of Don't Shoot Portland. We're an extremely active Black Lives Matter movement here in Oregon. My first thing is that I just want to state what accountability looks like. As a police accountability activist, when we came into the opportunity to engage with the city of Portland, our mayor and our commissioners, Independent Police Review, and anyone else that stood on the front of public service, We felt like by working with you, by creating dialogue, by attending sessions in Salem and speaking towards the legislation of body cams and working with special prosecutor language with senators that were writing the language, by bringing people out to testify and meet with their legislators and their representatives, and even coming in here, having dialogues with Daryl Turner, being active with the COAD process, promoting it to our community, we thought that those were angles of activity that would show that we were being accountable. My mic is having an issue.
Fine.
So when we get to this situation and we're told that we should have been a part of this 6 months ago in order to say, you know, credibly that the process needs to be delayed because there hasn't been enough community engagement in regards to the policies that are still watered down. And I'm not saying that everything that's in there is not right. I'm saying that there are a lot of people in this community for a very long amount of time that have said that we have issues with community policing. We've already got the MacArthur Red Foundation report that says that there is a problem with over-policing minorities in Multnomah County. Our jails are filled with children in and out of McLaren and Oregon State Penitentiary for very low-level crimes. We are waiving children's FERPA rights just so that they can receive wraparound services through Multnomah County. Those FERPA rights are being waived, and their information is shared with different city bureaus. That's causing more overrepresentation in our criminal justice system for the juveniles. It's causing dysfunction and overrepresentation in the foster care system for those families that are vulnerable, that live in poverty. And the biggest enforcement tool that you have for all of this is our police. And so if we're saying that the humanity of those most vulnerable citizens in this state are being undermined by the law enforcement, the over-representation, the over-policing, and we've managed to organize in a way where we can engage with you, at this point where I'm standing in front of a board that is five people white and I'm black, and you know we've been out there saying Black Lives Matter, I don't see that you care. I can't say that at all, that any part of us trying to engage with people that have power has given us any kind of understanding that safety is a part of the initiatives that you guys are seeking in these new contract negotiations. We have a new mayor-elect that is taking office in January. This is not even due for signing until June. We're asking you, we've been begging you, we're demanding that you delay it. For the same reasons that Dan Handelman from Portland Cop Watch, from NAACP, from Basic Rights Oregon, from AMA, and from the ACLU, and any other organization, their statements are valid. We need you to delay this process. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
The next three are Ashley Albies, Tom Steenson, and Carol Landsman, and they will be followed by Gary Marshy, Charles Johnson, and Robert West.
Good morning. I don't remember what the order was, so whoever goes first wants to go first, go ahead.
Sure. Good morning, commissioners. Good morning, Mayor. My name is Ashley Albies. I'm with the Portland chapter of the National Lawyers Guild. We've been involved with police accountability and oversight in this city for many, many years, and we appreciate the opportunity to testify here today on this proposed ordinance that would ratify the collective bargaining agreement. As an initial matter, Mayor Hales, I was here and I heard you this morning say that staffing is a critical issue, and that's part of the reason for negotiating this contract mid-contract instead of next year, less than a year when the current contract ends. And our position is if you're going to do it now, do it right. There are a lot of issues that are not addressed by this collective bargaining agreement that relate directly to police oversight and accountability. The National Lawyers Guild strongly affirms the right to bargain over the terms and conditions of employment. We strongly, strongly support labor rights. But where public policy related to police accountability and oversight relating to the safety of our community, relating to holding officers accountable when they violate the law, when they violate directives, when they threaten community members, when they make people feel unsafe, those issues are public policy issues that should not be bargained for behind closed doors. The police have awesome power in this society. They can enforce the law, they can arrest people, they can use force against community members, and they can take a life if necessary. The people here today are speaking out because they want one thing, and that is a check on this power. Teresa Rayford made the point that the Red Report shows that there's a disproportionate policing against communities of color in this city, in this state. The Portland police data itself, collected data itself, shows that there's disproportionate policing in this city. We applaud the elimination of the 48-hour rule, but again, what is currently existing in this contract allows a, quote, reasonable opportunity or reasonable time for officers not involved in deadly force incidents, but say if it's a profiling complaint or a discrimination complaint, to review that footage before writing their report. And this goes to Commissioner Novick's question about, you know, can they correct mismemory? But the point is that, again, this is a tool for accountability. If somebody, an officer, is accused of profiling and that officer has the opportunity to go back and look at police footage and then all of a sudden find a law that was broken, there's a lot of laws that can be broken, just by walking down the street, jaywalking. And if that is a bias-based police encounter, it provides the opportunity to skirt accountability by finding a reason, and there could be any reason for making that stop. I've heard former Chief O'Day and Chief Marshman discuss the small amount of use of force that Portland police members actually, Bureau members actually engage in. So these accountability tools and these accountability measures are going to apply to a small number of police interactions. And it's our position that this oversight, additional oversight, is necessary for those small interactions to, for officers to be held accountable during those interactions. I've provided additional information about the city conceding that the video policy is subject to mandatory bargaining. I think that's a huge concern. Mayor Hales, you just stated that you believe that the city council will be able to review that, but that doesn't change that this agreement says that this is subject to mandatory bargaining, which means the PPA has more say than the people of this city over this policy. And we think that's a big mistake. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. I'd like to be next. Tom?
I'm Tom Steenson. Good morning, Mayor and Commissioners. I'm a member of the Community Oversight Advisory Board. I also chair the Data Systems Use of Force Compliance Subcommittee, and I'm a member of the Accountability Subcommittee. Unfortunately, I cannot speak today for the COAB for a couple of reasons that you should be well aware of. First of all, the city has refused to fill vacancies on the COAB. We are now down to 8 members instead of 15. The city has also refused, as required by the settlement agreement, to have twice annual meetings with the COAB. The mayor specifically, the chief specifically, and others are to be at those meetings, and those have not been occurring. As a result, on August 12th, we voted, or not voted, but 6 of the 8 of us decided we had to do something because we weren't being allowed to meet. We voted, the 6 of us, to recommend that the DOJ fine the city in noncompliance with the agreement because of its failure to fill our vacancies and its failure to meet with us. We are supposed to be the go-to community body at this point, and you've put us in a position where we can't hold meetings, and what effectively happened after the vote to have you held in noncompliance, 7 days later, we were forced into what was called a recess. The DOJ and the city decided that we couldn't meet for 60 days. I anticipate that's probably going to be more like 6 months by the time recommendations for changes get considered and we are reconstituted in some way. I think it's deplorable that you have not filled the vacancies. I think it's deplorable that you won't meet with us. What I want to point out is pending are 44 recommendations on accountability that we spent probably 6 or 8 months meeting with city officials, community members, researching policies throughout the country, and drafting. Unfortunately, because the COAB can't meet, those recommendations can't be considered for a vote. I'm going to make them part of the record. It's a comprehensive analysis of what needs to happen in this city for ongoing police accountability. We are terribly concerned. I can only say it individually, but I think I speak for the others as well informally. We are terribly concerned that this contract that you're about ready to sign is going to lock us out of being able to change policy, or not policy, but change provisions in the contract that relate directly to the operation of the IPR, who gets to investigate the police, and it will undermine the efforts of the community to change accountability in this city. And so we urge you to slow down. There is no reason to rush this through. take your time, delay it, and look at our recommendations and address accountability in the fashion that ought to be addressed. Thank you.
Thank you. Good morning. Good morning.
Good morning. I'm Kara Landsman with Portland Cop Watch. And I guess I want to start by saying something that lots of other folks have said. Cop Watch, Portland Cop Watch, is very dismayed that the bargaining sessions were held behind closed doors, and we don't understand why the city doesn't strive for more transparency. The other thing...